Welcome to the Annex Wealth Management SWAT Podcast. This is episode 99 for Monday, April 15th, 2024. Insight and perspective from members of the Annex Wealth Management Investment Committee. Joining us today, Ken Bellinger, Senior Trader. Hey, Ken.
Good morning, Danny.
And we got Brian Jacobson, our Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. Welcome.
Yeah, it's great to be here. And thanks, everybody, for joining. We really like doing these things, so please do share this. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe, rate it, share it with a friend. We really believe in providing empowering education to clients and future clients. And so we really do like spreading the word. So please do your part. Let's take a real quick look back at what happened this past week. I think there were two main drivers of market moves. One was the consumer price index coming in hotter than expected. Thankfully, the producer price index came in a little bit cooler than expected. So that offset some of the fear from the CPI. But then, of course, there was also the talk about what's going on in the Middle East. And we need to really see how that plays out. Reports about how Iran might be attacking Israel in retaliation from some other incidents in the past. So that's one of the things that really seemed to be driving markets on Friday. So we're going to have to see how these things unfold. Now, looking ahead, in terms of the economic data, I'm really interested to see how these retail sales numbers come out. Those will be coming out just in a little bit. The previous number was 0.6% month on month. Survey says that it might be 0.4% in March. We'll have to see if consumers are continuing to do what they do best, which is consume. And then, of course, we have Tuesday with the industrial production numbers. Those always come out the day after retail sales. Gives us a nice holistic picture about how consumers are doing, followed up by how manufacturers are doing. Then on Wednesday, we get the Beige Book, that collection of anecdotes from around the country from the Federal Reserve. Always an interesting read. And then wrap up with Thursday, existing home sales. So lots of good stuff on the calendar ahead. And of course, it's earnings season. And so, Ken, I don't know, not to throw you on the spot, but are there any earnings reports that you kind of really like to look at? Some bellwethers? We got some on Friday that I like looking at, like the banks. I always like seeing not only how did they do, but also what are they saying in terms of with their finger on the pulse of Main Street America. But are there any sectors or any companies that you really like to follow?
Yeah, maybe not necessarily company specific, but certainly sector specific. And you know, one that maybe doesn't get necessarily as much attention, but I think is always worthwhile, is the transports, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, so thinking about rail, trucking, shipping, all those kinds of things. And maybe that's just because I'm a bit of a supply chain wonk, as it's probably come out over these podcasts over the the last year or two here. But to me, that's always a good bellwether for global activity.
Oh yeah,
certainly on the manufacturing side. Industrials feed into that a bit too, so I'd throw those in as well. But from a global perspective, certainly as we're thinking more on a goods based economy, that's kind of things I look at. Obviously, domestically, we're a little bit more services, so correct.
Sure.
So it's not the end all be all, but.
Well, doesn't that go back to the whole Dow theory, right? As far as looking for strength in the markets, as far as how our industrial is doing, but that's also why you have the transportation average, right? It was about, are you getting some early reads from the transportation sector as far as the movements of goods around the world?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's take a look at some of the SWOT framework, starting with some strengths. Big one that I noted from this past week was really the dollar. And some of that driven by fear is, I guess, somewhat reassuring to know that King Dollar still is a safe haven. We didn't necessarily see a big move lower in yields on some of the geopolitical issues, but the dollar did strengthen with some of the increase in risks around geopolitics. And then we also had that difference, almost different strokes for different folks, especially in terms of central banks. The Federal Reserve likely to stay patient, keeping rates about where they are for a longer period of time, but the European Central Bank coming out and a few members of their governing council actually were somewhat advocating for cutting rates already at the most recent meeting. I thought that was kind of interesting. A lot of us were expecting maybe they'll set up a June rate cut, but already a few of them are getting a little antsy to cut, and that has helped push the dollar a little bit stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just that differential and kind of anticipated yields in the short term, right? Or we're seeing the dollar certainly catching a bit as we saw yields kind of rise over the past week domestically, while internationally that wasn't necessarily the case. And a lot of that is we continue to see pretty strong job numbers, certainly compared to historical norms, right? The U6 is incredibly low. The actual unemployment rate is also, you know, fairly low as well. We're still seeing pretty strong consumer confidence numbers. We saw that on Friday where, yeah, it dipped, and it dipped a bit more than anticipated, but you know, we're still in the upper 70s. It's still a fairly strong number.
Yeah, and I always like looking at the political divide in the consumer sentiment numbers. It's one of the supplemental pieces of material that the University of Michigan provides, is whether or not the people who identify as Democrats or Republicans or independent. Those are the three different categories as to how are they feeling about current conditions and future conditions. And as you would imagine, in whoever's, if your party is in power, your sentiment is typically high. And if it's not, then it's typically lower. So I usually like to kind of dismiss those and just focus on the independents. How are they feeling? And that actually took a marked move lower in this preliminary reading, which I thought was kind of interesting. A lot of it has to deal with the feeling of a lack of progress in terms of just economic developments, not just growth, but also on inflation. And then I think also some of the political situation, not just in the U.S., but even globally, has been weighing on sentiment. So that was kind of interesting. But there's also been some of the strength, not just dollar, but look at the commodities, Bitcoin and gold. I mean, how those have done lately. Those are up quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, since mid-February, we've seen Bitcoin rally 60%. We've got gold up 20%. I tend to think of those as kind of younger generation, older generation, sure, flights to safety, yeah, kind of plays. You know, certainly people argue with you on both of those cases that it's more than that, right? But
yeah,
generically, that's kind of how I view them. But then even outside of that, on the commodity side, copper's up 16% since mid-February. We've got crude up 20%. Coal is up 10%. Gasoline's up 27%. And all of this stuff eventually does feed into inflation over the long haul here. So it's something we absolutely need to be paying attention to, but certainly strengths in the market.
That's right. And some of those strengths today can turn into weaknesses in the future, you know, especially when it comes to commodity prices, as far as the cost increases to businesses. Do they pass that on, resulting in higher inflation, or does it just erode away at their margins? I think that's one of the big questions that I have, is what's likely to happen given how price sensitive consumers have become. I begin to believe that those margins of businesses are likely going to take the brunt of the rise in some of these prices.
Yeah, absolutely. At some point, there's a limit, right? I'll speak to the oil side here, at least for a little bit. You know, part of this is certainly fed by, you know, the geopolitical issues and supply chain constraints, which we've hammered on a ton here. You know, production being, you know, decreased in Russia because of all the attacks they've suffered from Ukraine, which, although blacklisted here, certainly not globally, right? So that all feeds in. You've also saw, you know, when prices spiked, you know, post-COVID, when we were, you know, north of $100 oil, the oil majors were incredibly restrained and really focused on balance sheet health, as opposed to traditionally that sector being overly aggressive and ramping up production and then tanking the price. So a combination of those two things, I think, has kind of led to this pop you've seen over the past 2 months, is the global supply chain and of energy has become a little bit rattled.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the majors have really focused more on acquisitions of other companies as opposed to acquiring new capacity on balance for the entire industry, right? So instead of throwing money after new wells, it's about buying smaller players out there to acquire their assets instead. And, you know, that consolidation is something that maybe that will redound to their benefit and shareholders over time. But we have seen a number of those deals. And I think it makes the energy sector a really interesting one to look at as far as some of the dynamics with merger and acquisition activity.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, it feels more like efficiency gains as opposed to, you know, I guess you could say pricing power a little bit, if you know, over the long haul, acquiring up all these smaller producers. But yeah, it's really a lot of efficiency being gained in that sector. And technologically, too, just like any other sector, too. I don't think that gets discussed a lot about all the improvements in oil well technology and what they're able to do now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think some people got aware of all the technological innovation when there was the talk about the shale gas revolution. Right now, all of a sudden, a lot of people started going on to YouTube and watching videos and Wikipedia to learn how that's done. And it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's a cool study for sure. Why don't we move on to weaknesses here real quick? And, you know, as we kind of alluded to earlier, we had a really hot CPI. And, you know, I think some of the details of the net CPI print were fascinating.
Well, I like to look at the CPI and then also the PPI, so Consumer Price Index and the Producer Price Index, because the Federal Reserve is focused on a different inflation measure, the Personal Consumption Expenditure Deflator. So it's a broader measure of inflation, and there are parts of the CPI that go into it and parts of the PPI that go into it. And there is a huge difference in the insurance component, especially health insurance. In the CPI, it showed how health insurance costs that consumers are paying really went up very rapidly over the last year. I think it was around 20%. But in the PCE, so the index that the Fed watches, that actually more comes from the PPI, the Producer Price Index. So employers, what are they paying on behalf of employees? So it's not just what do you pay out of pocket, but also what's your employer paying? And so that only rose 6%. So if you kind of average the two, maybe that's what's going to eventually show up in the PCE numbers. So even though CPI was really hot, the PCE, which is what the Fed is more focused on, that might not be quite as hot. So I find some encouragement there. There's also a big difference in terms of, let's say, shelter. We know that that's a huge part of the Consumer Price Index. It's not as big of a part of the personal consumption expenditures deflator. So a lot of the inflation that we got in the past month was shelter and energy, and you could also throw insurance in there. But those big drivers of CPI aren't going to have as big of an effect likely on the Fed's preferred measure, the PCE. So some of those details, I think, really matter, especially when we think about what might the Fed do or what might they not do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think calling that out is really important, because especially looking at what we saw from the CPI last week, the two hot points, like you said, were shelter and specifically owner's equivalent rent. Which is this measure of like how much rent an owner would need to be paid in order to actually rent their house out instead of living in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then insurance, and specifically auto insurance. And that's yeah. its own unique beast with a lot of things being fed into that. You know, number one, the inventory decline we saw, you know, coming through COVID, that's still in the marketplace as far as, you know, affecting that supply demand dynamic. Yeah, we're going to be underwater cars for a while. Apparently, unless you're Tesla, because they've been marking down those Model Ys, and they're That's getting true. Interesting. And then on the insurance side, these cars are so much more technologically advanced. You know, yeah. 10 years ago, if you know someone hit the bumper of, or we'll go back to high school. Someone hit the bumper of my '89 Cavalier. It's like, well, that stinks. On we go with the day. But now it's like, okay, well, now we've got all these, you know, traffic sensors. We've got, you know, rear view cameras and all this other technology built into that bumper. Where, you know, this $500 repair is now several thousand.
Oh, yeah. It is pretty amazing, all the technology and the cost of that. And I've seen that a few times with people where what looks like a superficial damage to their vehicle ends up costing thousands of dollars just because of all the sensors that were destroyed and need to be replaced as a result of that. And also, no longer can you be a do-it-yourselfer with some of that stuff. I mean, try changing the oil on your car. Sometimes you need specialized tools just to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And all of this feeds into the reason why I'm hoping to take my car to like 300,000 miles, frankly, yeah. right? That way when I go to that baseball game and, you know, someone dings my car, it's like, well, it's got so many dings, who cares?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, in terms of now some of the other, maybe let's pivot towards opportunities. Be forward-looking, so we've looked backwards with strengths and weaknesses. I think that, you know, one of the biggest opportunities on a going forward basis is as we go into earnings season, probably the sifting and winnowing between winners and losers. Oftentimes what we see is this dance between analysts and executives in the run-up to earnings season, where executives of businesses try to ratchet down analysts' expectations, creating that lower bar. And so we oftentimes see, you know, like 70% of companies surprise to the upside, you know, and if you're consistently surprised to the upside, maybe you have to rethink about how you form your expectations. But, you know, that's maybe one of the opportunities. One of the areas that I think we've been focused more on is just with on the fixed income side with spreads, as far as how narrow those have been. But they're narrow, but it seems like they're not really budging all that much. Does that create an opportunity?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, right? Because you have to factor in, you know, what does the growth look like for the economy? What does the outlook, you know, for that individual company look like? And what are, you know, rate expectations for the Fed going forward? And I think what the spreads have been telling you a little bit here is that, you know, we still expect rates to fall,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you know, in my view, they're kind of tight for a reason. Now, if we have some major economic issue and there's a blowout, yeah, those are going to widen in a hurry. But this could also be a case where those spreads naturally widen as treasuries start to decline, as the Fed eventually does start to cut. I think we're all in agreement that'll happen at some point.
You
know, maybe it's not even this year, but it's going to happen, right? So if you're looking, you know, intermediate, long term, yeah, those spreads are tight, but perhaps for a reason.
Yeah, and when I look at spreads and I wonder about whether or not they need to widen, I just look back at history as far as looking at why did they widen in the past. Oftentimes, spread widening, so when you look at the yield on a corporate bond relative to a benchmark treasury, the widening has oftentimes happened very rapidly, very abruptly, with those corporate yields moving higher and coupled with the treasury yield moving lower. So you almost get this double whammy where the corporate yield goes up and the treasury goes down, widening that spread. And it's usually because there's something that happens where people start fearing a recession, right? So it's usually driven by a growth fear. Well, there are also other periods of time, and you kind of have to look maybe cross-country to see this in the data, is that those spreads can widen more gradually as opposed to abruptly. And it's often not because the corporate yields rise, it's more because that benchmark government bond yield falls, right? And I am wondering if that's perhaps the environment that we're going to be entering into, where if you're really looking for income and a consistent source of income on fixed income, maybe investment grade corporate, also higher quality, high yield bonds, maybe we see some of the stability with the yields there. And then think about treasuries. Maybe those yields are the things that need to perhaps correct down a little bit more. You know, we did see the big move up in yields this past week where the 10-year treasury suddenly goes up towards, you know, 4.6% or so, comes back down. My best guess about fair value, about where we might be headed, say a year from now on the 10-year treasury, is that it should maybe be closer to 4 as opposed to 5, right? So maybe move a little bit lower. And so that could show up as spread widening, but it's not exactly a bad type of spread widening. It's not that it's signaling weakness with corporates. It's more signaling that there's an increased appetite for buying treasuries. But I don't know, can you have too much of an appetite for treasuries when they've been force-feeding us treasury securities so much with deficits the way they are?
That's the other wrinkle to this equation, absolutely, is, you know, the amount of issuance that's kind of expected going forward to just finance the debt we currently have, much less, you know, the deficits that we continue to run, right? And perhaps holding those yields higher for longer, you know, either keeping these spreads tight or forcing a bit of a move the other direction. But yeah, so far what we've seen, even as, you know, yields have kind of, you know, bounced all over the place last week, is call it the raw yield on corporates has been fairly stable,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, the treasury's bounced up and down and the spreads have just kind of absorbed it.
Yep.
As opposed to causing the actual yield on the bonds to, you know, increase or decrease in a significant way.
Yeah.
Obviously minor little bumps, but
it is interesting that oftentimes when you see those spreads move, it's because it's the corporates that are bouncing around, but now it's been the treasuries that have been really bouncing around. And now, in terms of threats, when I was thinking of some of the threats to the outlook, I was reminded of a speech that former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld delivered back in 2002. He famously talked about how there are unknown unknowns. I don't know if you remember that. It got quite a bit of media attention. One of his answers, he started waxing philosophically about how there are known knowns. Then there are known unknowns. So known unknowns are kind of the risks that you're aware of. You can assign probabilities to them. You know what the possible outcomes are. You know, think about like driving, you know that there's lots of risks out there, right? There's these known unknowns. But then he talked about how there are unknown unknowns, and those can be of a couple different flavors. It's risks that come out of the blue. You never even really anticipated them. Or it could be a known known that suddenly you didn't really know, right? As far as something that you thought you knew that just wasn't so. And I think maybe those are some of the threats to the outlook, are these unknown unknowns. Obviously, now it's a known unknown about the conflict possibly rising between Israel and Iran, seeing that begin to be priced into markets. And you can always ask yourself, just because it's priced into markets, is it priced appropriately, right? The market isn't omniscient, but it does more often than not get things right as far as the pricing. But do you want to take a differentiated view there? But some of these unknown unknowns, I think, as far as one of the big ones where there's a lot of disagreement, I think, is what's the next thing to break, you know, or will it break in the economy? Fed keeping rates where they are now, does that mean that suddenly we're going to get to this point middle of the year, towards the end of the year, where all of a sudden the labor market decides just to implode on itself? I don't think that's going to happen, but that is one of those unknown unknowns that's lingering out there.
If we think about our known unknowns last year, it was, you know, commercial real estate and, mm-hmm. and regional banks, and, you know, those recovered, you know, decently well, you know, minus the one or two that actually did go under. Yeah, so I guess we'll exclude those from the math, but on the whole, right, things emerged okay.
Yep.
Right. But, you know, perhaps that's still one of our known unknowns is commercial real estate as well. You know, it's, you know, work from home and hybrid work continues to be a thing. And
true. Well, and another known unknown would be the PE ratio, right? Price to earnings. It's elevated. It's not at nosebleed levels necessarily, but how does that resolve itself? And there can be two different ways. There can be a good way and a bad way. A bad way is obviously when the price falls to lower the price to earnings. But the other way is where the earnings grow to also reduce the price to earnings ratio. And I think that's also one of those known unknowns out there as to how will that resolve itself.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interesting dynamics there too. And specifically, I think of, you know, even pre all the geopolitical stuff that's happened over the past couple of years, you have this idea of onshoring and bringing mm-hmm. production back. Maybe not domestically to the U.S., but, you know, certainly like Mexico, Canada, Latin America, those types of places, and trying to reduce dependence on China. You know, just even the building of those plants, much less the production within those, you know, spurs some growth, mm-hmm. right? You know, employment's up and then, you know, consumers feeling a little bit better, able to spend. And that, you know, again, not necessarily a U.S. phenomenon. You've certainly seen it in Mexico and Latin America.
Sure. Yep. Absolutely.
So at the end of the podcast, we always go around the room and we see what the headlines are. What's our headline strength this week?
I think the biggest strength was the dollar.
Headline weakness.
A hot CPI print.
Headline opportunity.
Corporate bonds for income.
And our headline threat.
The unknown unknowns.
There we go. Episode 99 of the Annex Wealth Management SWAT Podcasts. Ken Bellinger, Senior Trader. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
And Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
Thank you.
Annex Wealth Management, LLC, is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit annexwealth.com. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is subject to change without notice. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and don't necessarily reflect on those of Annex Wealth Management, LLC. Information presented should not be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice, or a recommendation or a solicitation for the sale of any product or strategy. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from qualified professionals to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Investments involve risk. Neither Annex Wealth Management, LLC, nor its podcast participants shall be liable for losses resulting from decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on this podcast.